Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Morning. Just was showing you a few issues of Texas Metro news that you need to know about. Hello. You are watching I Was Just Thinking, and I am your host, Norma Adams-Wade. And as I always say, you are my co-host, and I stole that from Wendy Williams, and we wish her well. Let me explain my mask. In a minute, I will remove it. But I'm wearing it as a show of cooperation concerning the still existing national health protocol about the pandemic that we are very encouraged to be told that it is greatly decreasing. And so I'm in a building with other people, but I'm in a room by myself. And so looks like there are some technical problems, so let me go off a minute, and we will return. Okay, so let's start over. Add a new one. And then do a new StreamYard, right?
Oh, no, you do it.
Okay, let me let you do it. When I hit go live.
Yeah. It's not, Go ahead and sit down.
You can't see. You don't like too much.
I'm okay.
You're stretching like you're uncomfortable. Let me turn the light off.
I'm trying to press off this with the lead on Facebook. Try creating a new broadcast or just remove this destination from the broadcast and re-add. So basically, this broadcast was deleted on Facebook, and they're saying that you can remove this one from your thing or re-add it.
Okay.
Tell
them
it's
not. You can re-add it.
It said that it was deleted off of Facebook and that I'm not going out. But then you were saying what's deleted on Facebook. But I'm a hit on live. Now, let me say this. I did a test run this call. This is the guest of our phone call. Did a test run with him yesterday. Make sure you time him
No,
okay, let's see. How do I get the whole list to come down? Just find something.
You don't want to play?
No, I don't want to play him.
There we go.
Well, who is Johnny Hathaway? What is he singing?
Ooh.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was the land that he worked by hand. Yeah. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. Yeah. It was a love that I was proud of. This is the life that he planned. On the love, the same old love. In the house that Jack built.
The house that Jack built.
Remember this.
Man offers. Sometimes you hurt me so bad. My tears run.
I don't know why I can't make it work.
It's not behind the song.
Yeah, it's not.
Game, now I know my duty. Stay humble, stay low, blow like Hootie. True pimp, spin no dough on the booty. Yeah, there go Mace, there go your cutie. See me die and see me fly. I call all the shots, rip all the spots, rock all the rocks, top all the drops. I'm never taking down when all the ball stops. You never home, gotta call me on the yacht. 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. Yo, I thought I told you that we won't stop. Now, what you gonna do with a crew that got money much longer than yours? In a team much longer than yours.
Body and time,
B.O.J. We don't play, mess around, be on your way. Cause it ain't enough time here. Ain't enough lime here for you to shine here. Deal with many women, but cheap.
And, so I was explaining before we had that technical problem and I went away about 10 minutes that I will take my mask off because I wear it to honor the health protocol. But I'm going to go ahead and take it off now and pick up where we were before the technical problem. And I hope everybody is in place because remember now, y'all, y'all are my co-host, and you've got to help do all the technology stuff for this broadcast. So get on the job, audience. Get on the job. We've got an interesting guest coming on at noon. But in the meantime, I just kind of want to review some things that have been going on in the community. Let's see. What did I not tell you? I wanted to tell you that if you want to call in, you can call in on Blog Talk Radio, and that number is 646-200-0459, and I will click you in and we'll talk. 646-200-0459, and let's see, what else did I want to tell you? It's so interesting when these technical things happen. It instantly makes you accept the fact that this is the 21st century. And like it or not, you've got to live in it. Okay, I hope some of y'all were able to get in on the Together We Dine event that was yesterday, where people of all ethnic backgrounds sat around and dined together and talked about racial issues and how we all need to learn to live together. So that was yesterday, and we had been telling you about it in advance, so I hope you were able to get in on it. And it was back to a live experience out on Collins Boulevard in Richardson. It had been previously, I think, I want to say for 2 years, maybe just one, virtual, but they were back live. So that was that. Now, also today is the ribbon cutting we told you about, and that's at 1 today for the L. Davis Logistics, and they are on Northampton, and they're having a ribbon cutting. It's a new black on, well, they're not new, but they've been around a while, but they're having a ribbon cutting on their facility, and it's owned by Lavert and Felicia Davis. They're the founders of L. Davis Logistics. And so they're having a ribbon cutting at 1, and the address, 1510 Northampton Road, Suite 210. Again, 1510 Northampton Road, Suite 210. That's in DeSoto. The Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce is joining in with them on that, so we want you to be able to do that. Then we wanted to also tell you a couple of things with gospel music. The first one relating to gospel music is this Saturday, April 2nd, and this one will be at All Nations Fellowship Church, and that's 5146 South Country Club Road in Garland, 5146 South Country Club Road in Garland, and the featured singers and musical presenters will be C.C. Godbolt, Carolyn Traylor, and Mark Ayers Jr., and it's called Evolution of Worship Concert at All Nations Fellowship. So hope you can get in on that one. Now, here's another one that's very interesting. This is, I don't know, this is sounds pretty captivating to me. This is one of the productions by Curtis King at the Black Academy of Arts and Letters. And it's a dress performance, and it's called The Death of Jesus. And it was written and directed by the outstanding Mr. Curtis King, who is the founder of the Black Academy of Arts and Letters. So now it's called The Death of Jesus, and it's a dress performance. It's part of a dress performance series that he's sponsoring. And it's at the Black Academy of Arts and Letters, which we know is downtown. Let's see, did I give you the, y'all, everybody knows where the Black Academy of Arts and Letters is. It's at 650 South Griffin Street, Akron and Griffin intersection, 650 South Griffin at the intersection of Akron and Griffin. Okay, so this is on April 15th, Friday and Saturday, April 15 and 16. So it's in partnership with several well-known churches in Dallas. So T-Ball is partnering with Friendship West, with part of the St. John Church called St. John Unleashed, also West Side, and also Antioch and Concord, all of these various churches, their musical department and their fine arts ministries are coming together to present this. And it's called A Contemporary Dramatic Easter Musical Pageantry About the Crucifixion of Christ. His crucifixion, his death, his burial, and his resurrection. Now, various creative or artistic directors are involved in it. Dr. Michelle McGee Norfleet, Dr. Clark Joseph, Dr. Patrick Bradley, Robert Jemerson, and Paul Jackson. Now, let me go through this again because I want y'all to go to this. Okay, it's called The Death of Jesus, and it's related to the resurrection holiday, Easter resurrection holiday. And it's part of the Dress Performance Theater series, and it's called The Death of Jesus. And it was written and directed by Curtis King, who is the founder of the Black Academy of Arts and Letters. The dates again, Friday and Saturday, April 15 and 16. I didn't tell you what time. There is a 2 p.m. matinee, and then there is the nightly performance, which is at 7 p.m. There's a 2 p.m. matinee, and then there is the 7 p.m. nightly performance at 7 p.m. Now, it's in the Arena Theater in the T-Balls facilities there at their facility is in a portion of the Dallas Convention Center. Now, you can get tickets at the door, or you can go online to their website. The floor tickets are $15, and the balcony tickets are $10. So you can access T-Ball's website to get tickets for that. But it's going to be a wonderful evening. There was one more thing I was wanting to tell you about. This one I wanted to tell you about this one also at T-Ball, and it's also part of that dress performance series. And it's also being directed by Curtis King. Now, this one is, let's see, this one is this Friday, and this Saturday. This Friday and this Saturday, April 1 and April 2. And it's called I Am a Man. Now, this relates to, it takes us back to the time when Dr. Martin Luther King organized the sanitation workers, and they held demonstrations, and a lot of the men carried signs. Well, I guess all of the men carried signs saying, I am a man. And they were demanding greater respect and pay and equality on their jobs and in societies as African-American men. They were demanding that. And it happened back in 1968, and it was the Memphis, Tennessee sanitation workers, and they went on strike. So this one-man show with Jock, and I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Jock it's either Laventour or Laventour. I'm going to say Laventour, Jock Laventour, but he may pronounce it differently. But he's going to do a one-man personal voyage back to that period in time. And it discusses the experience of being both male and black. He grew up in Brooklyn, and he gives it the backdrop of race relations in America. And it sounds like it's going to be very intriguing with this one man performance. And so again, those tickets, now this one will be in the Clarence Muse Cafe Theater at T-Ball. And again, T-Ball is at Akron and Griffin, the intersection of Akron and Griffin downtown. It's part of the it's like a little offshoot of the Dallas Convention Center, but the very wonderful Mr. Curtis King now uses that whole wing as the headquarters and performance hall for the Black Academy of Arts and Letters. So it's Friday and Saturday. This Friday, April 1 and 2. The performances, there is a 3 p.m. matinee, and the performances at night are at 8:15. Again, directed by Curtis King. So co-host, audience, y'all need to know that. It's going to be a wonderful evening. So that's that. Now, I also want to tell you about this one at the African American Museum. This one is going to be very interesting also. It's all about, you know, now in history, we're always told about how once enslaved Africans were freed, that there was this mass exodus to the north. That's what we traditionally are told, and then that is absolutely true. The part that history usually leaves out is that there was a good migration also to Mexico. So let's see what we're going to learn when you attend this event. It's a history conference, and here's what it's called: the Underground Railroad from Texas to Mexico. Now, again, this is a conference, and it's going to be at the African American Museum, April 8 and 9, and it's called the Underground Railroad from Texas to Mexico. That's a Friday and Saturday. Registration is free. Registration is free. It's free. But now, if you want to go and have a box lunch on site, you need to register and pay $20. That's only if you want to have the box lunch to go along with this event. But without the lunch, you just register and it's free. Now, let me give you a little background about it. There are about five different panelists and speakers and presenters. All of them have a background in history, and many of them have specialized and done particular research on the experience of what happened to descendants of Africa, the formerly enslaved, once the Emancipation Proclamation went into full effect. And so they've studied this Underground Railroad, and their research shows that in addition to formerly enslaved Africans going north to places like New York, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, and even Canada, these researchers have found out that there was a southern route. And so the formerly enslaved went from Texas to Mexico. A great number of them went from Texas to Mexico. So these scholars at this history conference who have studied this southern route to freedom, they will talk all about it and how formerly enslaved Africans found freedom in Mexico. And it became another viable promised land of sorts, just as Canada did. So the conference is free. The conference is free. Now, a very well-known historian here in Dallas, Robert Edison, can give you more information about this event. And you can email him. And let me give you his email. Is R as in Robert, and then Edison all together. So it'll be R-E-D-I-S-O-N, Arthur Robert, and then Edison all together. R and then E-D-I-S-O-N at aamdallas.org. That's the email for the African American Museum, Dallas. So again, Robert Edison's email, if you want to email him to get more information or ask some questions, R-E-D-I-S-O-N at aamdallas.org. Now, you can call the museum's number, and I'll give you the number and his extension. His phone number at the museum, the main number for the museum, is 214-565-9026. 214-565-9026, and it's extension 334. That's his extension, 334. So one of the panelists is Kyle Ainsworth, and he's both a librarian and a researcher. And he worked on a project called, the project was called Runaway Slave Project. That's what it was called. And he's at Stephen F. Austin State University. Now, another one is Alice Baumgartner, and she's an assistant professor of history at the University of Southern California. And she has done work and produced a work called South to Freedom, Runaway Slaves to Mexico and the Road to Civil War. That's some research work that she has done. Now, another presenter is Dr. Dana Ramey Berry, and she is a history professor. And she's, excuse me, my voice is going away, but she is linked with the University of Texas in Austin. And she has done various research projects, but she knows a lot about this subject, about the African diaspora and this discussion being part of the African diaspora. So she will talk, give her insight on it. Now, two others are Roseanne Bacha-Garza, and she's an anthropologist at the University of Texas in Rio Grande Valley, and she will give her input. And then the last one is Dr. Elaine Hudson, and she's a history professor at Houston Tillotson. Dr. Elaine Hudson, and she's a history professor at Houston Tillotson University. And remember now, it's free, but this is a part of history we don't hear a lot about. And so we want to, and remember, this is at the African American Museum. It's at the African American Museum. And so you want to go and be a part of it. It's April 8 and 9, which is a Friday and Saturday. So go to the museum and learn about the migration from Texas to Mexico, and it was called the Southern Route. Now, one other thing, I just want to give you a kind of an advance heads up about the Quest for Success event, which will be in May. And so you've got time to prepare for that. Now, that's another event of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce, another event of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. And so this one is in May, the Quest for Success. And this is the 38th annual Quest, and it's a luncheon. And there will be a special musical performance by Maya. I'm not familiar with her work, but I think I want to find out about her. But the Quest for Success luncheon is May 10. So this is advance notice, give you enough time to plan for it. And it celebrates African-American entrepreneurs and nonprofit leaders in the local area. Celebrates them. And so put that on your calendar, the 38th annual Quest for Success luncheon. Starts at 11, from 11 to 2, May 10, which is a Tuesday. That's a Tuesday, May 10. And the luncheon is from 11 a.m. to 2. And it celebrates African-American entrepreneurs and nonprofit leaders in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So those just are a few of the things as we prepare for our guests. And so I want to give you some of our Black history moments. And just make sure we're on board here. Yeah, so from time to time during our gathering together, we're gonna look at just the local African American history in Dallas. And my good friend and I'm gonna have to work harder to get him on the show. But I'm talking about Don Payton, who is a very, very respected local historian who knows A to Z about the history of African Americans in Dallas. So, oh gosh, almost well over 20 years ago, he did a piece for a D magazine, and he chronicled the entire history by dates of African Americans in Dallas, and he brought it all the way to when we elected the first African American mayor in Dallas, which was in the mid-90s. He started from the first known enslaved person from Africa, and that was in the early founding years of Dallas County. So I'm just going to see how far we can get just for today, and then each time we can have some time, we'll take it from one period of time to another. So let's see how far along we can get. Okay, this all started in 1842 when the Dallas County was being settled. Now, many of you have seen that cabin in downtown Dallas, and it's the first cabin that was built in Dallas County. And so these families arrived, and history shows that the first written name that Peyton could turn up for an enslaved person who came with these early settlers, and it just said Smith. It just said Smith. But that was in 1842. So well over hundreds of years ago. So that was like a starting point. And then, about 9 or 10 years later, this horrible thing happened. And George Keaton, with Remembering Black Dallas, has done a lot of work on this event. And it was the hanging of an enslaved African woman, and her name was Jane Elkins. That happened in 1853, about right close to a decade after that first descendant of Africa arrived. And it was a legal execution, but guess what? She was hanged for murdering a white man who raped her. So he didn't get hanged. He didn't serve time in prison. He was not arrested. He was not hauled off in handcuffs. He was not ostracized. He was not punished, but she was hanged. Now, she was raped, and she defended herself. She killed him. I don't know exactly how she did it, but she ended up being hanged for this man raping her. And so her name was Jane Elkins, and if you want to know more about her, you can get with the organization called Remembering Black Dallas. But Peyton made note of that in his chronology of Dallas. Now, I think that our guest has arrived, I believe. So let me see if I can get him in. Hello, is that Paul Allen? Okay, that is him. Let me see if I can turn my sound up some. And let me welcome you, and let me tell the audience about you. So everybody, this is Paul Allen, and he is the president of Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers. And the Buffalo Soldiers, I'm going to let him tell you all about it, but you see them in various parades. You see the local and people throughout Texas who are members of this Buffalo Soldiers group. And just I'll just tell you this little bit. It preserves the legacy of the Buffalo Soldiers. And so Paul Allen is president of the Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers. So good morning, and how are you doing?
Doing good.
Good. And we had a little bit of a technical flub-a-dub earlier. So let's just get right in, because this is, to me, such an intriguing discussion. So let's begin with, tell our audience, Mr. Paul Allen, president of Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers, what is this organization about? What is the organization of Buffalo Soldiers?
I started an organization actually when I was working with the Dallas Police Department in community services.
Okay.
And working in West Dallas.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to find an organization for the youth out there that was documented and that the whole community would accept, business as well as the African American community, because we needed resources.
Okay.
Buses and transportation and uniforms and all kinds of things. So actually, and then I had to sell it to my supervisors who were, well, media supervisors were black, but they didn't know anything about the Buffalo Soldiers.
Uh-huh.
And then to the high echelon, but Anglos, and some of them knew, but they bought into the Buffalo Soldiers.
Okay.
Some of the other educational, history of black people, not even Martin Luther King, but back in the 70s.
Yeah. Okay. Now let me, and I'm a terrible interrupter, but let me put a pin in this right now. So there you were a member of the Dallas Police Department. And what period of time are we talking about? What year did you?
That was from 1970. And I left in 1981. We actually started the community service program. We're working with the, working with the youth, trying to keep them out of
trouble. Right. Okay. So there you were, and you're working with you're seeing a lot of the activities of young African Americans in the West Dallas area. And so you get this idea that you'll start this organization about Buffalo Soldiers for the youth. Why Buffalo Soldiers? Why did your mind go to Buffalo Soldiers?
Well, again, as I said, as I researched it, it was documented.
Uh-huh.
The military has wonderful documentation.
Okay.
Even of the black.
Okay.
African-Americans participated in war. Mm. And it was something that I could sell to the public community.
Ah.
It was an organization that I could sell to the public community.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Oh, so how did you start? I mean, what, you called the first meeting, or you went door to door, or how did you get these young people? And this was like a call, something like a youth division or something like that, or?
Right. I used basketball as a carry, because it was the most expensive sport activity to do.
Okay.
And I ran into a couple of guys. Matter of fact, one of them was a star at Adventure in basketball. He became a coach, Kenneth Moore.
Okay.
And then there were several other guys who became coaches for me, but Curry Oakey.
I didn't hear that. What?
Curry Oakey.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He started the organization that the city eventually took over, the African organization.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
He had just gotten out of prison.
Okay, karaoke, yeah. He's no longer with us, I believe.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Karaoke, yeah, he's a well-known Harambe person. Uh-huh. So he kind of got in the initial activity with you.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
He became one of the coaches. And the guys that I was coaching, all of them basically were involved in, juvenile delinquency and
criminal
activities, but right. To get them into the organization, and we did an education
Okay.
And they noticed that the Polish report and Polish community relations got better.
Oh my gosh.
And bigger, like the crime.
Okay.
As a result of that.
Okay, now let me flip back a little bit, and we'll jump around with this subject. But you were a Dallas police officer at the time. Let's go ahead right there and talk about what got you involved with the Dallas Police Department. Were you a former military person? Kind of bring us to Paul Allen and the Dallas Police Department. Back in the 70s, I guess, in the 70s? Okay. Tell us, in your own words, what's the story about Paul Allen and the Dallas Police Department?
Well, I actually never wanted to be a police officer. I wanted to be an informant. I wanted to be a rancher.
Okay.
I'm originally born in Allen, Texas. And
You said Allen, Texas?
Allen, Texas.
Okay, so there's got to be some kind of history there. I don't know if you've done any research. You done any research on, huh?
There's a distant history. We haven't put it all together yet.
You better get in on some of that inheritance. But anyway, you were born in Allen, Texas, and you are Paul Allen, but you're going to keep digging for that, yeah.
From Allen to West Dallas. Daddy got tired of mud and utilities, and so we moved to West Dallas in the project. So I actually spent 5 or 6 years my early life in the project, and I got to know a lot of guys and what they were doing. And so when I graduated from high school, I went to Prairie View. Was gonna major in agriculture.
You majored in agriculture?
I was going to.
Oh, okay.
But then I turned and I majored in psychology.
Okay.
And graduated from a Bishop in psychology, and then fast forward, I joined the police department, and I start working. I start working with these youth, and that's how I got involved with it. Actually met a lot of the sons and relatives and even some of the guys that I grew up with while I've been with them.
Okay. Do you have many siblings or what?
Do I have any?
Yeah, do you have like brothers and sisters or?
I got a few. I had 6 brothers. 2 of them are deceased.
Yeah.
And I still have. You might know Sam Allen. He ran for sheriff a couple of times.
I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, he's brother after, younger than me.
Okay.
I got 2 other brothers, and then we have 1 sister.
Okay, very good. Okay, and so your parents, as you said, you grew up in what we would call, I guess, a rural farm type setting, and that intrigued you. It sounds like you kind of liked it and that you wanted to go into agriculture, is that right? Growing up, what do you remember about it? Did you feed
exactly.
the...
I wanted agriculture so much I actually integrated McKinney High School.
Wow.
Back in 64.
Okay.
I took ag and a couple other subjects out there.
Yeah.
And I worked at this horse ranch, and one of the biggest rednecks in McKinney.
Yeah.
Who became like a father to me.
Is that right?
He told me that he had natural instinct working with horses.
Okay.
He said, I can teach you and you can learn it and you can get number one. He said, but you'll never get it because of your culture.
Oh.
That's the relationship we had.
Yeah. Right.
So that was one of the other reasons I changed my direction from horses, breaking, raising, breeding horses as a mainline source to the psychology of working with youth.
Okay. That's so intriguing. So now, I'm going to come back to the horses because just a personal confession, I used to collect artwork about horses. I have no idea. I know nothing about horses. But as a youth, whenever I see a painting or a picture of a horse, I used to make a copy of it because they, to me, they're such magnificent animals. I wish I knew more about them, but I've made
well,
a risk.
You've got to come out and visit me. I live on the acreage. I have a ranch. I have a horse.
Okay, well, we're going to get to how that came to be. So there you are. You begin with the Dallas Police Department. You've got this background with horses. You've got this background with ranching. You know psychology, so you knew how to kind of mentally relate. Then you grew up in the area, so you had a lot of natural links there. So here you go. You start this organization of young people with the Buffalo Soldiers. Now, in terms of the history of the Buffalo Soldiers, now my limited history is that there were they relate to the Civil War. There were some cavalry units called that. What tell us what your research told you about the Buffalo Soldiers from your own research?
The Buffalo Soldiers actually grew out of the United States Colored Troops, which fought in the Civil War.
Okay.
And to really understand the soldiers and their endeavors in the military, one has to go back and look at that, at the United States Color Group, which is just now coming out. It's just now beginning to be a lot of information on them.
Okay.
The Buffalo Soldiers were sanctioned during the reorganization of the military after the Civil War.
Okay.
1866.
Okay.
And their main mission was to secure the western frontier.
Okay.
The thing west of the Mississippi.
Okay.
So they were the first soldiers that were sent out. They were the first soldiers to, track in into the desert and plains areas to explore it so that the settlers could come out and settle.
Now let me jump in here. Just from time to time, and you tell me if I'm wrong or off track, I've heard that Buffalo Soldiers kind of were put up against the Native Americans as if we were used as a buffer to protect, like you said, the frontier people, the settlers who were coming to the frontier, and that Buffalo Soldiers were out front to hold back or combat Native Americans. What's your take or your findings on that?
To a certain extent, but you got to remember that the warring tribes, the Native Americans, they were fighting against themselves.
Okay.
Different tribes, they fought against themselves. In fact, in some of the tribes, the Native Americans wouldn't even sit down to talk to the Anglo or the government without Buffalo Soldiers being present.
Wow.
And some of the soldiers actually became chiefs of some of the Indian organizations. So
what you say? Oh my gosh, that's surprising and interesting.
Yeah, it's you have to look at the region that the soldiers went in.
Okay.
The region that the Indian went in.
Uh-huh.
And the different tribes.
Okay. Okay.
A clear understanding of the relationship with Buffalo Soldiers. But I'll tell you this, the best warring Indians against the soldiers respect the soldiers so much that they're the ones that actually gave them the name Buffalo.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. Tell us about this name, Buffalo Soldiers.
The Buffalo was absolutely everything to the Native Americans.
Okay.
It was shelter, weapons, tools, clothing, and probably more important, the buffalo was spiritual to the Native Americans.
Huh.
And given all of that,
mm-hmm.
they named these soldiers an animal that they were reverent. And the story goes, and there's several different stories and interpretations of it, but one seems to make the most sense is that the Native Americans, they would have, they would put spears, arrows, bullets, everything in the buffalo to kill him while he was running, and the buffalo would run until the last drop of blood.
Wow.
And when they were fighting these soldiers, they noticed the same behavior out of these soldiers.
Wow.
So they named these soldiers after an animal.
Okay.
Yeah, everything, absolutely everything.
Wow. And what was that part about the woolly hair, something about the look of the woolly hair looking
well,
like?
Well, some of the first books that came out didn't tell the whole story. You know, so much of our history has been revised.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so they didn't want the world to know that these soldiers were actually warts. So they used this hair thing, but when you look at the buffalo soldier hair between his ears and the hair on most African American heads, that's not much similarity.
Okay. Okay.
So
that hair story was just kind of like some legend or something. Yeah.
It was just to hide the fact that these soldiers were actually warriors.
Wow.
And they didn't want to give them. They didn't want to give them.
Didn't want to give the credit. Wow. Now that brings me to, and everybody, audience, we are talking with Paul Allen, a former Dallas police officer beginning back in the 70s and 80s, and he in West Dallas founded this organization called Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers, and it was a youth division, and it was a way for him as a Dallas police officer in West Dallas with, you know, children growing up in poverty and what have you. And he founded this organization, and it really took off. And the young people ended up being less crime and what have you. And still today, from the 70s on up to today, we now still have Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers, and Paul Allen is president. Now, I want to ask you, we can assume that with, this being beginning after the Civil War, and we know all about the experience of Africans being enslaved, what has your research and your own personal opinions as well told you about what these men in these cavalry units, all black units, what did they have to what did they endure racially? What are your thoughts on that, and what has your research found on that?
Well, for the most part, internally, they had to deal with the racist leaders.
Yeah.
Because at that time, most of the the officers and above in the organization, they were ex-Confederate soldiers.
Okay. Okay.
And even the ones that weren't, there was only a few of them that actually treated them fairly. You know, like they were treated the white soldiers.
Okay. Okay.
So these soldiers had to deal with not only the hostile Native Americans.
Hmm.
And at one point in Texas, they were only law enforcement. In Texas, the Buffalo Soldiers, right after the Civil War, they were on the law enforcement straight. So they went after robbers and murderers, and, you know, all of the people that were, you know, committing crimes.
Wow.
So so then when you really look at it and really dive into it and to how they contribute to America, you find that as a result of the, as I said earlier, the United States Color Troop and the Buffalo Soldiers were the core.
Okay.
Of the United States Color Troop. They helped write the 13th Amendment.
Okay. Okay.
Uh huh. And the 15th Amendment.
Okay. Tell us basically what those are. That covers 13, 14, and 15. I forget. What do they cover?
The 13th Amendment creates slavery in the Constitution.
Okay.
The 14th Amendment, so the 14th Amendment made a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 15th Amendment was a voter.
Okay.
And so then you had the civil rights bill in between that. Of course, you had, during Reconstruction, you had politicians, black politicians in there, fighting. But the main spark to start all that was those amendments. Because
right.
In the 13th Amendment, when it was signed and proposed, it was stated in there. It was stated when it was proposed to the Senate that the soldiers should be able to become citizens and their families. Of course, it expanded,
right,
from that.
Right.
So they had a firsthand. They were firsthand. It was because of these soldiers and what they did, during and after the Civil War, that really caused. The argument is out now whether or not Lincoln actually had to do with that or whether it was some of the other senators. And when you look at it, you dive into it, you find that there were senators like Henry Wilson.
Okay.
And some other people up in the North who actually had more to do with pushing these amendments through than Lincoln did.
Let me ask you this, and I'm going back and forth between your experience founding this organization of Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers and starting with the young people. But do you see much similarity with the experiences of Buffalo Soldiers that you have researched and your experience as an African-American police officer? As you were going through your day-to-day experiences as an African-American police officer in Dallas, back in the 70s, 80s, do you see any much comparison between the experiences that you experienced during as a black police officer?
Oh, absolutely. So much so that I became one of the charter members of the Black Police Association.
Okay.
And twice president after that.
Okay.
While I was there, and some of the things that we filed grievances and lawsuits on was the fact that we were disciplined more harshly
than
white counterparts.
Okay.
We were fired quicker than our white counterparts.
Mm.
And right down the line, same thing the soldiers had to deal with.
Yeah.
So, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That's so intriguing. And, today, oh, gosh, it's just, I'm not a young person, but I would imagine that it's hard for a young generation person, particularly among the African-American community, to really have insight to what early black police officers experienced. We know the whole story. Conflict between the police and the African-American community. But I'm just thinking that the new generation just can't get it. As you go day to day looking at life today, the George Floyd story, the gentleman in L.A. whose name is leaving me, who was Rodney King. As you're looking at all of those experiences and you're looking at the George Floyd experience and you're looking at police community relations today, and it seems like it's an ongoing issue. What's going through your mind as you're viewing all of these happenings? How do you react to that?
Well, one thing is you have to take each and every one of those situations on its own individual merit.
Yeah.
And we make the mistake a lot of not doing that, and then we generalize it to the general population.
Okay.
And that's a mistake. Of course, those high-profile have the abuses and the killings, of course, that's the ones that make the news. But people, a lot of times, don't understand some of the specifics of those situations. And I'm not saying that police not making mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm saying that mistakes are being made on both parts. But you just have to look at them on
that. Okay, but that intrigues me. Let me pursue that a little further. I want to know, just like the rest of us, I'm trying to think when I first saw the clip of the knee being on Floyd's neck from looking at my TV screen. When you first saw the image on your TV screen, I guess even heard it on a radio report, what was your initial reaction?
That was totally, absolutely abuse. Just looking at
okay.
That. Okay. So the force you use is no more force than is necessary for you to bring the situation under control. And, I mean, he was absolutely under control. I mean, there's two or three other officers there, you know, right there. So, yeah, that was absolutely.
But let me jump in on that. We the general public are told that if you are a police officer, and I believe those, at least one or two of them, I believe, were rookie officers, and we're told, you know, it's insubordination. You don't go up against your superior. That's kind of a tough call. What is your thought about those other officers? What could they have done under police protocol at that time? Of course, now I think we've had the George Floyd Act, I forget what the status is on it, but where you, an officer has to speak up now. But at that period of time, you didn't speak up as far as I'm told. What's your thought on that? What else could those young officers have done?
Well, legally, they were bound to jump in legally, and you're trained that you get as a police officer.
Okay.
Culturally, inside of, you know, practically, in other words, yeah, they were doing basically what most, a lot of other officers would have done, and that's nothing.
Okay.
You don't want to cross a senior officer, or for that fact, another officer, for fear that you might need to help, even though you might think that they're wrong. But I've had situations like that where I jumped in and stopped an abuse. And, you know, from an officer who was known to abuse and who had actually killed and was no bill on, you know, the charges.
Yeah.
But I jumped in and stopped it.
Okay.
But, it's, you know, like I said, it's individual. It's a difficult situation. The best thing you can do, an organization can do, is give police officers the best training that you can, and then hope that they make the right decision. And even though those decisions sometimes are, you know, just split decisions, it's a difficult job.
Yeah, and that's my conclusion. That's just got to be a tough spot to be in. What, as you look back, and I'm really intrigued about your years as an African-American police officer, as you look back on those years, well over a decade, what sticks out in your memory or your assessment of that period of time? What's your main takeaway from that life experience that you had? What do you take from all of those experiences?
From a personal point of view?
Yeah, personally, as you look back on your personal experience as an African-American police officer and what you, I'll use the word, endured as well as experienced. Well, maybe let me put it this way. Is there anything you would change? Is there anything you learned from that experience that you take forward with you?
Well, I think there ought to be training And when I was there, kept increasing the increasing the training and the quality of training that they were giving us. And that along with a congressional investigation. Because we had a lot of shootings at the elderly people.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of our missions in the organization was to stop that.
Yeah.
As an organization. And so they changed the law.
Okay.
It was more or less priority over life, believe it or not.
Wow. Say that again. At that period of time, I heard you say it was more. Go ahead.
Property over life.
Wow.
And that was more specifically as it related to the African American community. In other words, it seemed to be that they were more apt to, make an arrest.
Yeah, yeah.
Or get engaged in conflict over property than saving a life.
Wow. That's heavy duty.
After the congressional investigation and that we have pushed forward as an organization as well as other community leaders, it changed it. And when they changed that, we got less killing, less abuse.
Oh, that's so encouraging. That is so encouraging. So I want to know about today, the Buffalo Soldiers. I believe you have an annual event or maybe several events. What are some of the annual activities that the Buffalo Soldiers have? And how do y'all stay in touch with you? And it's a national thing. I mean, you're with Dallas County, but Buffalo Soldiers are a national organization. So how do y'all stay in touch with each other, the different chapters, or tell us about your annual events or your regional events or whatever?
Well, let me first do a disclaimer here. Here in this area, I was the first one to start the organization. There have been two or three other organizations that split off from my organization.
Oh, okay. I got you.
They're not active, for the most part. We're the ones that's still active.
Okay.
Now, on the national level, we have the national office now is in Houston.
Okay.
Museum under Paul Matthews.
Uh-huh.
And then a few years after I started the organization here, the Parks and Wildlife, Texas started our organization.
Park and Wildlife? Okay, okay.
Park and Wildlife. They started our organization.
Ah.
So we have meetings and programs for them. We have programs here in Dallas. The pandemic has kind of messed our schedule up.
Right.
November. We're putting together a larger program. I have a date for anything yet, but we have a monthly sometimes, but we have monthly meetings.
Okay.
Now
y'all have participated in the Martin Luther King parades and what have you, haven't you, and other gatherings like that? Am I correct?
We were doing it regularly until the pandemic.
Okay, right. So the public could see in uniform. I wish you had a picture to show of you in uniform or some of the group. You got any pictures around? Is anything on your wall there?
I don't have anything.
But y'all dress in the full regalia of the uniform. Is there anything? Oh yeah, there you go. Yes. Okay. That's it. it. That's the uniform, everybody. Oh, I'm so glad you. I'm so glad we could see that. I'm so glad. What about the hat? Is it anywhere near your hat? Put it on. Put it on so we can see it. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So are there significant parts of the uniform, like the hat? Does it have a name or that thing on your sleeve? Are there certain parts of the uniform?
The insignia on my sleeve is the first sergeant. That was the highest rank that African Americans could achieve. With the exception of Flipper,
okay,
who graduated, he was the first graduate of West Point in 1879.
Wow.
So that was the first, before then, this is the highest rank that you could achieve.
First sergeant, okay. Okay, very good. Now the hat, what, does it have a name or anything?
Let's just call a forge. For that, it of course keeps the elements off of you, and you use it to water your horse, sometimes even to feed your horse.
Oh my gosh! I didn't know that. I did not know that. Oh, but you know what? Now that you say that, I want to say that I have seen some westerns on TV, and I want to say I think I've seen that type of a scene. The hat and feed the animal. Oh my gosh, I thought that was just Hollywood. I just thought that was Hollywood. Oh, that's great. That's so great. I am so glad you have the uniform and the hat to show us. That really brings it to life. Really brings it to life. Now, what about the young people? Were they able to have uniforms, or how did that go in the West?
Yeah, we have uniforms for them. It's a similar uniform. And then in some, we have like the dickies, the dickies.
The blue jeans? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, great, 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 great. So those are some of your annual events. And like I said, we can't really talk much now, but the pandemic kind of stopped a lot of that activity. I want to know about the young people and horses. Did the young people get a chance to interact with horses or learn about horses? Was there anything like that?
With horses and all the way up to I have some that I've worked with over the years. That some of them 30, 40 years old that only own horses and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And we also teach them gardening.
Okay.
We teach them gardening. They have a garden at my place.
Okay.
We teach them how to put a garden, in their yard.
Right, right.
Above-ground garden.
Okay, but now make sure that I'm clear on this. We have to go past the pandemic, but and how it stopped a lot of things, but. Right now, if there's some young person out there who would like to become a member or join the Dallas County Buffalo Soldier Youth Division, I mean, is that possible? Are you still got to get back in gear after the pandemic? Where does that stand right now?
Well, we can go ahead and take the applications and
okay.
Start them. Uh-huh. And start them out now. It looks like hopefully the pandemic is letting up, so we're beginning to get out more now.
Okay.
I have an email, phone number, we can give them.
Okay. Well, we're in a little bit. I think we've got a little more time. I want to talk about, I still want to talk about horses a little bit, but when the young people first come to your place and get to interact with the horses, I mean, where do you start? What do you tell a young city person? What do you tell a young city person when they come to your area and meet a horse for the first time? I mean, how do you get them to where they need to be in terms of how to deal with the horse?
Well, first of all, you know, of course, you have the side and the parent side, the whole harness group, and then we go through the safety things.
Okay, what are some of the safety things? What are some of the safety things?
Talk about the distance, the stand from the horses, and where it stands, because, you know, people think they can just get injured by falling off a horse.
Right.
But the horse can actually just step on them.
Oh.
You know, just step on. So we talk about, you know, those safety kinds of things like that. And once we got them satisfied with that, then we let them brush the horse.
Okay.
And then further on down, we give them a demonstration of riding. Like to get in the arena and, you know, ride and show them how to, you know, set the horse, how to balance themselves on the horse.
Okay. So you do this at your place, or y'all go somewhere else to do it?
Well, we're doing it at my place right now.
Okay. That's fascinating. And you said that there are, through the history of this Dallas County chapter, that there are some former young people who did end up getting their own horse. Did I hear you say that?
We got guys that's in their 30s and 40s that came into the program.
Okay, there. All right. Okay. We're before we end, we're going to get to how people can get in contact with you. I want to just wrap up a little bit about current, I'm going back and forth between the Buffalo Soldiers and the Dallas Police. What's your opinion on two things? First, I want to know, what's your opinion on the other officers in the George Floyd situation? And I'm kind of behind on where that case stands right now. But do you think that the other three officers will get off, or what do you think will happen in the George Floyd deal?
Well, as I said earlier, legally, they are liable.
Yeah.
You know, under the oath and the agreement that, you know, being the police officer, they're liable.
Okay.
But practically, I don't know. I'm not that familiar with their policy.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, you have to look at their policy and compare that to the legality of it.
Okay.
Okay.
And then my other question is the current situation of police, black community relations. And you already know that we've been through some tough phases with the relationship between Dallas Police and the community. How do you assess, and, you know, we've got a new police chief now and all of that. How do you assess, you look back on your personal experiences as a former Dallas police officer, and what current police officers and the black officers today, do you see much difference? Do you see improvement? Do you see areas where you still would like to see more of this or that? What's your current viewpoint on the current operations and situation?
As an outsider looking in, I see progress made in terms of minority officers being promoted and placed in sensitive areas of police work. As police in general out on the street, I don't think that they're being given quality of training.
Okay.
Community service is what we were doing to community policing.
Okay.
And like they have a remote division doing that, but I'm not all that familiar with, you know, how they're doing it and how well they're doing it.
Right, right. Okay, now we're getting close to telling the public how they can get in touch with you. So now I think in the chat we're going to put your email address, and you'll tell us what it is, and we will write it in the chat so that the public, if they're interested in their young people joining the Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers Organization, they can. So go ahead and give us whatever contact information you want the public to have. How do they reach you?
Okay, one email would be paulallen748@gmail.com.
Okay.
And our phone number is 972-748-6978.
Okay, now let's we're going to get that in the chat, and let me say it. Paul Allen, all run together, PaulAllen, and then the number seven, the numerals 748, and then at gmail.com. And that's going to go into the chat. Let me say it again. Paul Allen, PaulAllen, and the numerals 748 at gmail.com. That's your email. Okay, now the phone number that I wrote down that I heard you say, 972-748-6978. Let me repeat that again, 972-748-6978. And we'll put that in the chat. Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's correct.
Okay. Okay. Now, how can the public help move forward your efforts working with Young Buffalo Soldiers? What can the public do to help? What kind of public assistance from parents and community leaders and what have you? How can they help move this organization forward?
Calling that number, uh-huh, and setting up time to, you know, get together and talk, and then the organization, we'll come out, make presentations, the information that we give, the reference that we give will inspire, educate, motivate the youth as well as the adults about their history, just a little history that I've given you on the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment. For instance, we wrote Constitution of the United States of America.
Wow.
A lot of people are not aware of that, how important it is, you know, just to be able to vote and how they come about.
Wow.
It can be very, very, you know, not only educational, but inspiring.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I've told myself that one day I just need to go back and review, you know, each of those amendments, everything from women getting to vote to, like you said, the, what were those three you pointed out? I'm trying to remember what we talked about on those. Oh, yeah, I think you said citizenship and then voting, and then that 13th, as you said, dealing with soldiers, that they were kind of out front on that, if I heard you say that. So, all of that is just such valuable education. And I still need to do that. At one time, I had they used to do little pamphlets of the amendments, and you could drop it in your pocket or what have you. So that would be certainly valuable education information, and for young people. Well, not just young people, for all of us of all ages. That would be great. So people have your contact information, they've got your email, they've got your phone number, and I heard you say that any organization or group of individuals can contact you, and you and maybe the young people or whomever else you work with will come out and talk to their group and give various demonstrations, and that I heard you say that is inspirational, is educational, and is motivational. Inspiration, education, motivation, and we certainly need that today. So before we wrap up, are there any other points that you want to make while we've got this public forum and we've got the public ear? Tell us anything else that's on your mind, or any other opinions you want to express, or any information you would like for the public to know.
Well, I'm just glad and happy that you have me on the program today. We go way back. I don't know if you remember me.
I do. I remember you in the Dallas police officer uniform. I remember how your the Black Police Association. What was the name again? The Black Police. Right. I remember y'all fighting various issues back in the day. I absolutely do. And I was always so, as a member of the public, I was just so happy and proud of the work that y'all were doing, because y'all were out front. You were on, quote unquote, on the battlefield, for lack of a better term. And y'all took on some difficult projects. You really did. And even with the police shootings you talked about, those were not easy times. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
In fact, during that same period, a lot of white and black police officers in other cities were getting fired. We never got to that point here because I know me personally, I went to the white association and talked to them. You know, sat down with them, and talked to them, and negotiated with them, so much so that when we got the pay raise back in the early 70s, we made a deal that if the blacks and blacks helped support and get that pay raise, which it did happen, that they would help us, they would give us support in doing community policing. Of course, they backed out of it after making that deal. But my point is, we would go to them.
Yeah.
Home.
Right.
To them. I did this personally.
Right.
I go to them to talk to the president, talk to the members, and explain to them what we were doing,
right,
why we were doing it, and, you know, so forth. So we kept communication open. But yeah, it was dangerous. It wasn't easy.
And about how many, I don't remember this, about how many African-American police officers were there at that period of time? About how many of y'all were there?
Before our organization stepped out front and started filing lawsuits and things, there were never over 80. If it got over 80, they would start firing us. One way or another, they would get rid of us.
Oh,
my
God.
Finally, once we stepped out, the whole executive board of our organization, which is about 7-8 of us, was transferred to the personnel department. That's after we started filing the lawsuit. Transferred us to the personnel department, and we started recruiting. And then that's when the number of police officers start picking up.
Oh, my gosh. That is just so fascinating. So fascinating. I mean, one last point. On the use of weapons, how did that pan out, being a police officer and carrying a weapon? Was that much of a stressful, I guess is the best way I can point it out? But you grew up rural, so you knew about, I guess, survival taxes, for lack of a better word, but was that additional pressure on you, or what?
Yeah, that and the fact that I just come out of Vietnam about 3-4 years before I joined the police department.
Okay.
I had a PTSD, which it wasn't called that then. I didn't know what it was, but it was that, and the weight of the organization and being a police officer.
Wow.
So it was kind of
and see, you didn't tell us about your Vietnam experiences, but since you mentioned that, I just want to know, as you, when you were in the Vietnam era military, at that point in time, was your mind, did your mind ever go to Buffalo Soldiers, or could you see, and even after you got out, did you see much comparison or similarities of experiences between your experiences in the Vietnam era military and what you knew about Buffalo Soldiers? Any similarities, any differences?
I didn't know anything about the Buffalo Soldiers at that point, except for one thing.
Uh-huh.
I saw the movie Woody's Grove, saw the Buffalo Soldiers, that was done, and I think it was back in the late 50s. I went to the Old State Theater over in North Dallas, came up out of Allen. We went and saw the Buffalo Soldiers. But at that time, I couldn't put the history stuff together.
Right.
And so it was not an education program for me. It was just exciting.
Oh, wow. I remember it. Now that you mentioned that movie and Woody Strode, he was a looming African-American character, almost sort of in the vein of Sidney Poitier, very, very looming and dignified and very respected as an actor, Woody Strode. I had forgotten about him and the impression that he made. So you went to the old State Theater in the Thomason Hall area and saw that movie, huh? Very good. Well, Mr. Paul Allen, we want to thank you so much for visiting with us. It has been just a pleasure to talk with you. And let me just, as an individual representing the public, let me thank you for your service. Let me thank you for your service, both in the military and in the Dallas Police Department. And let me thank you for the service you're carrying on today with our young people and teaching them these positive experiences, going all the way back to the you growing up in the West Dallas area and then going back sort of like to home turf and starting the youth division of the Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers. That's service. That's nose to the grindstone service. So I want to thank you for your service, and please go forward and have a great day and continue to be successful in your future endeavors.
One last word, if I might.
Uh-huh.
The service you did back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
On the Trinity that you did on the Buffalo Soldiers, you remember that?
Wait a minute, bring me up to date again. It was the Trinity and what?
The story you did on the Trinity, you know, that we had the facility down in the Trinity.
I do. Yes.
That's not there. We're still coming. We're still moving forward. So I'll be in contact with you.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't realize that it was still going on. Oh, my goodness. That is good information. Well, be sure to get in contact with me. Wonderful. All righty then. Thank you again, and we will pick up our conversation. Bye now. All righty. Everybody, that was Paul Allen, and he is president of the Dallas County Buffalo Soldiers that was founded to preserve the legacy of America's Buffalo Soldier Cavalry units shortly after the Civil War, and these very brave soldiers, and I think there were various divisions of it, the 9th and the 10th, and I think the 24th and 25th and something like that, and the Buffalo Soldiers were used as frontline soldiers during the period of settling the Old West. And, you know, this was a lot of Native American conflicts going on, and the settlers were putting the Buffalo Soldiers out front. And I forgot to ask him, and we'll have him back one day, about the Park Service. I had also been told that Buffalo Soldiers ultimately did a lot of work with the Park Service, and so we'll have him back, and he's going to let us know when they have, now that the pandemic is pretty much being reduced, they will be able to more publicly have activities. But he mentioned that down near the Trinity River, they used to do some projects as Buffalo Soldiers in Dallas with their various adult members and the young people. So it was all good. It was just all good and such valuable things to teach young people to keep them on the straight and narrow and to divert them from juvenile activities, which as he told us in his review, a lot of that was going on in the West Dallas area. And when he was able to get this Dallas County Youth Division started in the area, that a crime went down. This was like in the 70s. It was like in the 70s and early 80s and what have you. And so we always usually sign off with Teddy Pendergrass. And so I'm going to see if I can find Teddy again and let him tell us what he wants us to do. Teddy Pendergrass tells us that he wants us to wake up, and we're going to hear him take us out with that message that he wants us to wake up, everybody. Wake up, everybody. And he says, no more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. It's time to think ahead. So let's listen to Teddy, and I'm hoping you can hear him. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. Time to think ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, poverty. Let's see who else he's going to address. Wake up all the teachers. Time to teach a new way. Maybe then the young people will listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who are coming up. The world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the best way you can. Now, we don't own the rights to this song, but I want you to hear it. The world won't get any better. We just let it be. No, 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 no. The world won't get any better. We've got to change.
Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out. They do it every time.